You're listening to Investify, preaching financial independence and assisting investors to achieve a more flexible and free lifestyle through smart financial planning and real estate investing. If leaving the corporate world and jumping into this thriving industry is what you desire, tune in and listen to stories of like-minded individuals who made the leap to financial independence.
What's going on, everybody? You are listening to Investify. My name is Craig Kurlop, a.k.a. The Fi Guy, and I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Chad the Dad Rocky. What's up, Chad?
Hey, Craig. How you doing today?
I am doing fantastic, bro. How are you?
Good. Yeah. Let's see. Well, you and I were in Salt Lake over the weekend, so that was a fantastic time. And then Megan and all of our two-year-old, they turned around and went to Wisconsin literally the day after. Well, we got back at like midnight on Sunday and they left at 10 a.m. Monday. So
wow.
I'm flying solo for the week. So getting some stuff done.
What's going on in Wisconsin?
Megan grew her family is big into cross-country skiing, and it's called the Berkey, but it's okay. Like the largest cross-country ski race. I don't know if it's in the world or the United States, or it's a massive cross-country ski race. And so they've gotten this tradition back going here recently, and they'll go back and stay in an Airbnb. It's in Hayward, Wisconsin, like very, very northern Wisconsin. And it's just a kind of a party and family get together, cross-country ski.
I'm looking forward to seeing the videos of your 2-year-old cross country skiing.
Yeah, they're gonna get their own
skis, man. That's awesome, dude. That's great.
Yeah. So they're back there. I'm just chilling for the week.
Nice, man. Well, it'll be good to kind of get some time off into yourself here. Maybe get some stuff done. But obviously, yeah, it's always sad to see family kind of go away. And yeah, I mean, some of the perks about being a somewhat successful real estate agent for both of us is that sometimes our lenders treat us, and we had an amazing weekend in Park City, flew into Salt Lake City, and my first time in Park City, and it was gorgeous, and that house was absolutely insane. It was like a $10 million house or something, and
yeah,
I've never stayed in a place like that before. So
no, that's another lifestyle. Goals.
Yeah, there's like elements. There's like rich, then there's like rich, rich, and then there's like rich, 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 rich. And like that's the ladder for sure. But awesome. Well, speaking of rich and rich, rich, and rich, 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 we got the one, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. AJ Osborne on the show today. And this guy is got one of the most inspirational stories, in my opinion, of the, you know, almost of all of the real estate guys that I know. Like, and I'm going to let him, and if you haven't heard his story, like, we're not going to go deep. This is kind of an atypical episode. We're not going to go as deep into his story like we usually do, because he is more advanced. He is on lots of other podcasts, and we just didn't want to share with you guys the same information. So we tried to uncover some stuff that he may not have said before. And so we really kind of go into a lot of the mindset of what goes into being in such a down and low situation to then coming up, becoming one of the most successful business guys that I know, while also still remaining humble, having his family, and then also the amazing, amazing stuff that his wife is doing, and that he's been able to, you know, leverage what he loves to do to help his wife do these things too. So he's got a great story. Make sure you listen all the way to the end. He's got a funny final question that I think everybody will enjoy. But before we get to AJ, we're going to need to ask you to please, please, please leave this show a rating and review. It helps us get better guests, which helps the show grow and helps the show continue to happen. So with that being said, let's bring on Mr. AJ Osborne.
This episode of Investify was brought to you by the FI team, a team of investor-friendly agents that service all 50 states. If you are looking to house hack, to invest, grow your portfolio, and want a true investor-friendly agent on your side, go to thefiteam.com and click Get Started, and we can't wait to have a good conversation with you.
AJ Osborne, welcome to the show, my friend. How are you doing today, bro?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it. Just had you on my podcast. It was awesome. So it's great to come jump on here with you.
Yeah, man. I love that you're able to kind of return the favor. Obviously, for those that don't know AJ Osborne, right? Kind of like the king of self-storage, very, very big in that space. And so we're going to do something a little different today, right? We're not going to go through AJ's whole story. You can find AJ's story on a bunch of other podcasts out there. I highly recommend you go check them out because it's one of the most inspirational stories I've ever heard. So rather than dive super deep into that, AJ, why don't you kind of just start, give us kind of like the first, give us like a 5-minute synopsis of what changed your whole life to want to actually get into real estate, and then we'll kind of take it from there.
100%. So I did sales originally. I was in insurance and I sold insurance, and I lovingly referred to that as a treadmill. It was great. I was commissioned, made my own money, right? I never had like normal income career that didn't exist for me. I thought I had my own possibilities and everything else, but I really figured out later on in life, especially after having children, man, this thing is a treadmill. Like I have to keep selling, and the limitations were really obvious. So started investing in real estate, storages, facilities specifically because I viewed them as businesses and I could affect the revenue. And I was doing that while I was selling insurance. I actually became paralyzed from my eyes down overnight, and I was let go of my job, obviously, because I was hooked to life support, and we didn't know if I was ever going to leave the hospital. And there, we just had our fourth child. He was 4 months, maybe. And my wife is now sitting next to a bed with a husband hooked on tubes and a little baby in her arms with four kids. And I lost my job. So my income went away, vanished. And it was real estate that saved us. And it was real estate investing. And that's why I'm here. I've been investing, buying businesses, never talked about it before. But after it saved me, I became obviously very passionate about this and I wanted to teach others. And from there, I started up three companies out of my wheelchair as I was trying. I had to relearn how to do everything, occupational, physical therapy. I had to learn how to use my hands, talk, all of it, right? I'm still not 100% back, but I can walk on my own, which was more than they thought that I would be able to. And I started three companies out of my wheelchair, started a private equity company as well as others. And it's just been, you know, sky's the limit since then.
That's amazing, AJ. Just to give a little context of what year was this or time frame?
6 years ago is when I became paralyzed. Over 6 years ago, almost seven.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So 2017, 2018 time frame.
That's correct.
Wow. Okay. And so you already had real estate prior to being hospitalized. Is that right?
That's correct. It was one of the things that it was like, I think people feel like I thought my job, right, was financial independence because it was mm-hmm. sales. I made my own money. And I was like, this is, you know, I'm my own boss. Well, what really was true was all my clients and all my sales, they were my bosses. Mm-hmm. I didn't own my revenue. I didn't own the assets. I was paid a commission. And I realized because you lose commission and you don't get it, or then you may have a client leave you. All of a sudden, I was constantly being fired and having to get rehired. So I was always trying, like always chasing that buck. And so, you know, it dawned on me, I can't compound this. This isn't secure. This isn't passive. And that scared me as a father then of kids. And so real estate was my way of trying to shift that risk and trying to create more of a life that I wanted and not have to be like, I'm 60 years old on this treadmill here running to try to pay bills and try to get my kids through college and everything else. And that's not how I wanted to live.
Yeah. And I'll say that no one's foresight to investing in real estate is I want to have real estate so that if I end up in a hospital bed sometime, my family's supported, right? That's not what you think.
Nope. Wasn't what I thought.
Yeah. It's like, I want to spend more time with my family. I want to travel. It's the unicorn and the rainbows that people see. But there is a side benefit though, too, is that your family is covered in the event, God willing, you know, that anything happened to the main breadwinner of the family.
But here's something I changed my mind on. I realized that is actually the one thing that is guaranteed. Mm-hmm. You will not at some point be able to work for an income. That is 100% guaranteed.
What do you mean by that?
You will have to retire. You can't be old and be doing the same things that you do. At some point, you physically, mentally can no longer work. And we live so long now, that could be decades. And so all of a sudden, it dawned on me, I'm like, this is actually an inevitability. I will not be able to earn an income like I could. And yet when you're young, you don't think about it like that. But yet you think, oh, that will never happen to me. No, it's actually guaranteed 100% for everybody, or you die. Either way, though, eventually you won't be able to work for an income. What are your kids going to do? What are you going to do? How are you going to pay for things, right? And we just don't think about that, especially when we're young.
Yeah, I always find it really interesting of what the parents are teaching you to do is go to college and you get a job and you work that job till you're 60. And it's looked upon that real estate is risky. But in reality, it's risky having that one job that you could be fired tomorrow. You have no other skills. Like, that's what's risky. But nobody really talks about that. That's not what...
You don't own it. It's not yours. You're at the mercy, and it's single source, meaning that's it. All you're betting everything on red, everything. And yet there is no other option, meaning it's not like if you hit red, it's like a gold mine or anything. No, you're just hoping that it doesn't not, that it lands on red, which is crazy. It's a single source income that you have zero control over, yet people think that that is the safe route. That doesn't actually make even sense.
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely. I what I'm thinking right now is looking at like it's that analogy of a table, right? And each leg of that table is a form of income. And so if you've got one income, one leg that holds up a table, you knock that leg out and there's zero chance that table falls, that table stands. If you've got 15 legs on that same table, you could knock out probably half of those legs and it's still a pretty strong table.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's kind of the analogy that's in my head. And I love that you were able to see that. And it's important that you see it before you're in the hospital.
Yes. Right.
If you hadn't recognized this before that time, you know, your family would have been probably in a very different position that happened now than you are now. And so, you know, you started three companies from your wheelchair. Are those companies still around today?
They are. Okay. One has over $200 million in assets. The other one I sold for millions. And the other one's a million plus in revenue, still running today.
Amazing. And so, like, you could barely walk. You could barely talk. You had to learn how to eat. Yet you're starting multi-million dollar companies. Tell us about that journey.
So it was Christmas Eve. And I was, you know, I was excited because I was going to get to go see my family for the first time in our house. They were going to assist me and take me home to be with my kids on Christmas morning and then take me back to the hospital. And when I went into the hospital, it was warm. I was out in the backyard actually planting trees and stuff like that. So this was months prior. So I was very excited. And I wasn't worried about what my kids are. They're not going to have Christmas, right? I knew my wife was going to spoil them. What I was worried about was this, though. As I looked outside, I could see my reflection in the window. I couldn't sleep because I was so excited. And so I just sat up there watching the snow. And I realized that person that's now going to go home is not the same person that left. And there's two people that could show up. Now, when I actually go back home, one of two persons will return. That's AJ in the wheelchair, or that's somebody else. Now, that didn't mean I physically got out of the wheelchair. We didn't know if that would ever happen. And I was, you know, that is what it is. That was regardless. But the mentality is this going to be me? Is that now my life? I'm just this guy in a wheelchair. I live on my real estate, maybe disability, right? And that's me. Or is it going to be somebody else? The old guy's gone. That's gone now. So I had to think and say, I don't want to be that. And so I need to be something else, even if it's in a wheelchair, no matter what it is. And I was scared of it. I was terrified of it, actually. And so for me, it was a constant effort to be someone that I wanted to be regardless of my circumstances. And that sounds easy when you think about a wheelchair. So one thing you got to realize, I was in pain 24/7. I was on pain meds. I could hardly leave the bed. And then I had to be assisted and helped out. And so my brother lived with me for years and he would help me get dressed and he would actually wheel me in and sit next to me, like in the office area. And he would sit and he would watch videos or read while I worked because he'd left college to come take care of me. And so my wife could still take care of the kids and everything else. So that was the conditions that I started them in. It wasn't like, oh, I was fine, but I was in a wheelchair. No, it was way more than that. But I was more scared of becoming that person than I was the failure or anything else. And so I just made do, and I just tried my best, even though it wasn't fun. It was hard. I mean, I was probably a little bit obsessed with it because of my fear, but yeah, that's how.
How did you dig deep like that though? Like, what did you tap into mentally to, like, how did you even think that you didn't want to be that person? Like, people aren't usually thinking about that, right? Yeah. So where did
the
that come from?
Circumstances obviously drove a question that was big. Mm-hmm. Comfort is the enemy of progress. And mm-hmm. that is just true. It's mm-hmm. too easy to do nothing, and we're actually rewarded for it. Now, the problem is there's this internal deep understanding of I'm not becoming who I even can be, who I should be. But most of us aren't put in positions where we have to deal with that. And so I think that it is something that you have to be outrageously intentional about. I do today, and because I don't have to do anything anymore. And I work very hard because I love it. And I want to create, I want to build, I want to become more, I want to be more. And that's fun for me. Like, like it's not like I have a job and I'm working, it's not fun. So the first thing is, I think you need to be really honest. And I'm actually very much against this like positivity mindset, where it's like we tell ourselves not to think bad thoughts, things like that. And it's like, no, just be positive. I completely disagree with that. Those negative things in your head that says you can't do this because of that, that is a roadmap. Instead, embrace it, hold it, and say, all right, now deal with it and figure it out. By ignoring it and overcoming with this blind positivity, anything's possible. What you're doing is you're triggering dopamine in your brain that overcompensates the fear and uncomfortableness of not doing. So you're getting the reward without having to do anything because you're ignoring the reality of your own situation, and you're dealing with it by saying, it's okay, I'm great. Mm-hmm. Now, I believe in having faith that you can do it, but that requires action. Not that you are just there or you're just perfect or you're just good enough because you're alive. Now, that's contrary to what most people think and what most people say. Instead, they want to listen to good music to get them out of a bad mood, and they want to get hyped up on something and realize they can do it, and they want that short-term motivation. But that's not digging deep. That's all surface level. You need to dig deep and find an understanding and then build a roadmap from it. And that brings immense gratification, confidence, because you're not ignoring, you're not putting to the side. You are accepting, realizing, dealing with, improving, and changing. And that's long-term success. And I had to be faced with that because I had no other option. My circumstances were what they were. They were outward facing. Everybody knew it. I knew it. I was uncomfortable all the time. So I got very, very comfortable being uncomfortable and dealing with crap. And it was okay for me to then say, I'm not everything I want to be anymore. I'm not. And that's not lying. That's not saying, no, you're just as good. No, it was the truth. I could not lie to myself.
Right. You know, this whole conversation that we're having here, it reminds me of one of the first books I read when I started being on this like growth journey. And it was Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Work Week. And in that book, he says that, you know, your success in life is directly correlated to the amount of uncomfortable situations that you put yourself in. And 100%. AJ, do you need to be in a hospital bed to feel uncomfortable? Like, what can people do?
Not at all.
You know, like,
dude, you got to realize I did that. I did that when I wasn't in a hospital bed. I was selling, I made good money, and I was uncomfortable. And so I started investing in real estate. So already I was in a position that most everyone would have done nothing. They were like, we made it. I'm making good money. I'm in charge of it, right? Everything else like that. And for me, it was this idea, though, of me understanding, first of all, where my money came from. So I had this direct connection with the revenue. I knew that if I don't do this, I don't get it right. It wasn't this imaginary income that appeared in my bank account. And I knew that I worked to get it, but I didn't see how everything... you're separated. You're separated from the source. You don't actually know what the company even is doing. It may go bankrupt and you may lose, and you don't even know it's happening because it just appears. And then you go out on a Friday night and you spend the money that was appeared in your bank account, and then you go back to work, and then you know it's just going to magically appear. Your benefits are going to be taken care of and whatever else. So it's by design to make you comfortable. Well, in my sales role, I didn't have that. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that I had to be uncomfortable also led me to see that, holy crap, this could go away, which then made me uncomfortable because I knew the reality of the situation. So I had to once again address. The key is this, not to think of them as bad thoughts, not to ignore the reality, but instead sit down with yourself. Write out what you don't like about yourself and why. To write down your fears, to write down your biggest worries, and then break it down to not an emotional level, but a very logical level, and realize they are problems to be solved. They're not set in stone. And that's why I hate the, you are all you need to be. You are amazing. Because it's mm-hmm. not true. And it also says that you, that's an immovable thing. That means that if that's immovable and they're wrong, you could also be a set piece of crap. Mm-hmm. I don't also believe that. Mm-hmm. And that's why I hate this definitive nature of you're everything God would want you to be. You're perfect and you're everything. That is setting a definitive nature where it's either that or you're not. And there's mm-hmm. no in between. Mm-hmm. We are not that. We are able to mold, to create, to change, but we can't do that if we ignore and we don't actually sit down with it. So it's a mental practice, and you need to be able to sit down with your negative thoughts and embrace them and not have an emotional reaction because you can't handle it, but mm-hmm. to realize this is great. I can figure this out. And yeah. two, I don't have to be perfect.
Right. Do you have any ways, like let's say that you in your everyday life that anybody could do that, to apply some of the, like this framework of a negative yeah. thought or whatever? Like, what do you do?
Yeah. So the first thing that I do is I accept problems, meaning that I actually encourage them. I want to uncover them. I want to see what's going on and what's wrong. And then you start small. So start small and you build the confidence of you solving big problems. So if you say, my problem is I can't retire today and I have an income and I should be able to figure that out. Hold on. Whoa, you're way so far ahead of yourself, right? Your problem is, first of all, that you have one single source of income, period, and it is attached to your time. So maybe try to do something very small that changes that slightly. Then what you do is you figure out that small thing. And you go, oh, okay, I figured that out. Now I can do more and more and more. And then all of a sudden, what was an overarching big problem is condensed down into small incremental things that you're learning as you're going. And you need to be uncomfortable not knowing. I view that progress, success, especially in entrepreneurship and investing, everything else, is like walking through the fog. Like, I have a map. I know where I'm going right now. I know what I'm trying to build. I know that I could fail. I know I will fail, but I could fail overall. But while I'm walking with my map, I'm walking in the fog. I can only see 10 feet in front of me. But every 10 feet I go, I can see another 10 feet. So I may have a map, but I still can't see. And I know in 10 feet, there may be a tree or there may be like a stream or something. Then I have to adjust, figure out and get rid of. But I can only see 10 feet in front of me. And that's okay, though. That's the thing is, you don't need to see it all. You need to move. You need to walk. You need to say, I'm here. I need to go here. And then you need to start going, but it's only 10 feet at a time. It's not the whole thing. And so what I do is I let those things come in. And then I practice dealing with them no matter how small they are. And then I actually set up structures that force me to do things. So this is another thing. I don't depend on willpower because I don't have enough. I have to deal with a bunch of hard crap. So instead, I set up situations perfect example, if I'm going to build something, I sign contracts, I make the commitments, I have rewards for the commitments, but I also have penalties if I don't go through it. And then I'm putting myself into a position that is uncomfortable. I'm forcing myself to now have to do it. And it may be really, really hard, but I've already committed. So mm-hmm. I then force myself to do it. I also surround myself with people that need things from me, mm-hmm. right? Like, no, you have to do it. I have an EA, so my executive assistant that I currently have right now, the biggest thing they do is make me get stuff done. They put things on my calendar, they sign people, things like that, and I just have to go. I lost my executive assistant for 3 weeks. One went to a new job, another one came in, training. During that 3-week period of time, I got less done than I'd gotten in years. Why? Nobody was there to make sure I did it.
Mm.
See, that's the thing is, once again, I realized, like I was talking before, you don't need a superpower. And it's not that one person has it and one person doesn't. It's just one person deals with the uncomfortableness and then they force themselves to do it. It's not easier. It's not funner. And two, it's not like naturally gifted or anything else like that. And I just take it in small increments. I set up things so I just can't not do them. And I put that in place and then I walk 10 feet ahead. And as it clears, I know I'm going to find problems, but I'll deal with it then.
Yeah. And I think one thing to talk about here too is discomfort, and that feeling of discomfort, it's a muscle, right? Like the more you use it, the stronger it gets. And so, you know, if you're listening to this, you may not be in a position where, you know, you feel like you can hire an EA right now, or you can do that, right? But like, what can you do? And so go do something uncomfortable every day. And this is what I did when I first started doing this is I would go on the streets. I was in California at the time. I would go on the streets every day during lunch and I would ask two girls for their numbers. I had no intention of calling them, no intention or texting or whatever, right? But it was uncomfortable to go ask a random girl for her number, right? On Valentine's Day, I had my intern go out, very like shy kid, go out and give 12 roses to 12 different women on the street. And he was about to crap his pants doing that. And then he finally, by the 12th woman, it was like easy for him, right? And I just thought it was like a very... You don't have to do things outrageous. Just like go do something uncomfortable.
Little things. Break it down very, very small and then build off that.
Yeah. And then you get confidence, right? You got, if I can go ask that random girl for her number, well, can I go call that investor and just catch up with him, an old friend of mine, right? To maybe talk about.
When I got started, I didn't know anything about real estate investing. Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was no social media. There was no podcast. There wasn't a book for me to read on that thing that I was going to do. I didn't know anything. I didn't know Jack. It was like, we just had to figure it out and hope we didn't fail, right? Like, and it was, at first, that was terrifying to me. Terrifying. Mm-hmm. And I was so worried about everything else like that. I was so worried about what I don't know. Now, it's literally like breathing to me. And it started out small, and now we're doing things that were, you know, a few hundred thousand dollars then, and now they're 50 million. And it's actually less scary for me to do that than it was to do a few hundred thousand, because it's a muscle and it builds upon. And one of the biggest things that I think people need to do is our risk to reward center is so skewed today. And I think it's really important that every time you're going to do something, the moment you feel that pullback. So let's say you're trying to go get two girls' numbers, right? I don't want to do that. The first thing you need to do is say, why? What is my fear? What is the worst that could happen? And I mean, go down. Like, I love doing this. I'm like, okay, well, here's what's the worst could happen, right? She says, no, I get upset. I cry. I walk out in front of a car. I got hit by a car. Now my face is messed up. Now I can't, like go dark. And then you're going to realize how absolutely ridiculous it is, right? Yeah. Like, it's okay. The real problem here is very, very small, and you can mentally readjust that risk to reward. I am a big believer in asymmetrical bets. So that means that the risk is very small, but the upside is huge, almost infinite. So a girl's number, what is the risk? She says no, because she's got a boyfriend or she doesn't like me. And what may the reward be? This could be a lifelong partner. This could be the love of my life that will give me endless happiness. When you start looking at it like that, that makes no sense on a betting. Like, what are you doing? You should go talk to everyone, because the reward so far outweighs the risk. It's literally not even logical.
Totally agree with that.
This relates well to, I have some friends who, they're just perpetual renters. And I have this conversation with them and like, dude, you should buy a house. And they're like, well, I mean, what if the water heater goes out? I'm like, dude, you're talking like $1,600 water heater. You just, because you're saving money by renting it out, you can just hire someone to come and do it. Well, what I gotta cut the grass. Well, yeah, you gotta cut the grass. But like, if you look at this, the reward of 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, where you have $500,000 in equity, what are we talking about here? Like, we're talking about mowing the grass and a $1,600 water heater, but they still don't get it.
This is my biggest thing is, okay, what's the alternative? Like, what are you going to do? I have to cut the grass, as opposed to what? Watching Netflix? So your upside is $500,000. Your downside is you don't watch anime on Netflix for an hour. It's wild to think about it like that, but it's true.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, some asymmetrical bets that, like, I guess, okay. So I think house hacking is probably one of the most obvious asymmetrical bets. Like, you got to live somewhere anyway. You got to pay rent. You might as well have somebody else pay it for you. The risk is paltry. The reward is massive, especially if you're in an appreciating market. As people grow up, like, grow, I guess, what are some of the asymmetrical bets that you've made, AJ?
Yeah. So first of all, marriage is an asymmetrical bet. A lot of people don't maybe view it that way today, but I think that is not only short-sighted, it's astronomically short-sighted. And that is backed by endless research. So if you're married, you're going to be more wealthy. If you have kids, you're going to be more wealthy. It creates stability, all sorts of stuff. Lifelong partnership. It's amazing the science that goes into living with someone, what it does for your health. There's all sorts of stuff, right? But at the end of the day, one of the biggest things that it does is it checks off a major portion of the box and it creates consistency in a way. Like, let's just be frank about it. It does. It's one less thing that is one of the most major things in life that you're thinking about or have to worry about. Now, the other things that I view as asymmetrical bets, obviously, we have, like, investing in real estate. Real estate is a really good one as long as I can define the risk. So a lot of people are worried about the risk. And when I look at it, it's you say, oh, well, if no one rents out my place, I have to spend $1,200 a month. All right. So $1,200 a month is that downside, right? That's what your downside is, because that's what you owe on the debt of that house. Now, your upside is $500 a month. And they're like, oh, that's a big swing, right? But that's not, because actually it's the $1,200 that's being paid for plus the $500, right? So you have $1,700 plus the equity creation in it. So it's actually a multiple of like five in comparison to the downside, which also, by the way, just because it's a downside doesn't mean it's going to happen. So then if you look at the lifespan of the property, well, what is the risk? There's going to be periods of time where it's not rented. Okay, let's condense that and compare that to the times where it is rented. So there's certain things that the longer you go out, that bet changes very much wildly. The nice thing about real estate is there is actual ways to limit the downside, right? And you can actually increase the upside through time. Lots of things don't work like that in life, but real estate is one. Other asymmetrical bets that I view is always self-education. The downside is a little bit of time, where the upside is opportunity creation. It's crazy. That is the simplest asymmetrical bet that makes the biggest difference out there, because it costs you nothing, yet what you get in return will pay forever. And it also compounds. And that's, I'm a big, big thinker on the compounding. Asymmetrical bets for me are things that compound. I build my businesses out, so limited downside risk, but I want this compounding effect. I also want it to be disassociated with my time, because if it's associated with my time, it restrains that. So it restrains the actual arc on the upside to whatever time can be allocated. That's why jobs are not asymmetrical bets. It's confined. It's like there's an actual hook tethered to the ground on your upside. So an asymmetrical bet can't have that. It can't be tied to your time. And once you unhook that, it just has this perpetual upswing. And so you can manage risks, you can understand risks, and then you can easily compare the future potential upside. The biggest thing, though, that I view as asymmetrical bets is that almost always the payoff in the short term seems not enough. And I know this because I didn't invest in real estate, and I definitely didn't do houses or things like that, because I looked at it, and it's crazy to even think about this now. But after 2008, I'd gotten approved to buy like 25 houses. And at the time, I was doing storage, right? And I was like, why would I go buy these houses, which I could have bought for $60,000? Because I'm like, they'll only make me $500 a month. So that's a waste of my money, because that's not a lot. Those houses are worth, you know, $600,000 today, and they make me thousands a month a pop. And it was like nothing. The downside was just nothing to me. And I still thought like that. In the next few years, it's only a maybe, so I'm not going to do it, right? It's really hard to get that out of our system. Really, really hard. And it's the way you do it is think about it in a much longer term. So whenever somebody's thinking short term, I'm like, you almost can't think about asymmetrical bets. Because part of asymmetrical bets is almost that, not infinite, but the huge upside. And that just takes time, and it can take time. But in 3 years, I don't expect anything to pay off like an asymmetrical bet where it would be multiples of upside compared to the downside. I would never expect it.
Yeah, it's the hockey stick, right? And you have to remember the first part of that hockey stick, the first 4, 5, 6 years, is very slow growth, and then it shoots up, right? And I think that's great. And I think like people do think, I think a little too, especially in today's market, right, where prices are a bit higher, interest rates are a bit higher, and people are a lot more afraid to buy than they once were. But what's going to happen, right? You can't.
Like, to opportunity cost, you guys, is a really big thing that I look at. So when people say, well, you know, Bitcoin's an asymmetrical bet, and I'm like, no, it's not. First of all, the downside is limited to whatever I put in. Yes, right? And the upside is theoretically infinite, but I can't measure it, so I don't know that. That's not something I can actually plot out. So the next thing is that if I can't plot it out, that's gambling. That's different. That's hopes and prays that it goes up. So to me, that's an actual bet. I don't bet, okay? I invest. And it needs to be an asymmetrical bet or investment to me. And then the next thing, though, the biggest thing is it's an opportunity cost for me. So if I can measure the upside on this, and I know it, and I know how good it is, and I can't measure the upside on this, and the risk is the same, well, why would I do that? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. So when I look at, and we say bet, guys, I don't mean bet. I'm not talking gambling. I actually need to be able to measure it and plan it out, or I won't do it, because that makes the risks way, way more and the upside much more limited because you don't know.
We hope this episode is inspiring you to take action. If you're thinking about becoming a real estate agent or an agent who wants to join an investor-friendly team, just hit me up on Instagram at TheFiGuy, because we are growing our team in Denver, Seattle, San Diego, and Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, but also adding to our network in all 50 states. And if you didn't already know this, the FI team provides a super supportive environment with one-on-one coaching, accountability, and ongoing training to help develop kick-ass, rock-star, investor-friendly real estate agents. So hit me up on Instagram, at TheFiGuy, and we'll set up a time to chat. Can't wait to chat with you.
Yeah, just going back to the like short-term thinking and mindset, I just had this conversation yesterday with a past client that he closed a couple months ago, and a lot of issues, like not normal of the showers are need to be redone, and he had a lease signed, and they ended up backing out, and then he found like a cut on his pipe, and all this stuff is happening to him. Like, dude, this is like, first, I'm sorry, like, this is not the normal, but you got to think like in 2 years from now, 3 years from now, or even 6 months from now, when you're all settled in, you're getting that rent check and you're living for free, like that's what it's all about. So there's definitely bumps along the road, but you got to keep that long-term mindset, like it's going to pay off for you.
Yeah. Well, and two, there's an opportunity thing. Like the thing I love about house hacking is if you don't have to pay your rent, what does that free that up to? So like to me, I'm like, that's a great asymmetrical bet because now I can use that money to invest. So I know exactly if I'm renting and I got to pay $1,500 a month, that's a zero sum game. There's no upside. I have a place to live. It's an immediate thing, right? Which that's great. We all have that. I got to pay for food, everything else. That's fine. But if I could transfer that to say, I can take that immediate necessity and eliminate it and then take that opportunity into something that has infinite upside, that swing is astronomical when you're starting out. It's really hard to measure how much of a small thing. Everybody wants to become a millionaire. Everybody wants to do this, right? Just get rid of your rent. Just do that. If you could do that, your life would so fundamentally change. That is an asymmetrical bet right there.
you almost can't not become a millionaire if you house hack for 4, 5, 6 years. Like, unless you're just reckless, right? But as long as you're living the same lifestyle that you were before you house hack, I think it's almost impossible if you can just pick up 5, 6 houses and then just wait 10 years. It's certainly a lot better than investing 10% of your income for 40 years and then you retire at 65, a 1.2 millionaire, right? And by the way, that 1.2 million will not make you a millionaire when you started your career, right? With inflation
and all that. So the problem is like you have a depleting factor. So this is my problem with the save and drain is at the end of the day, I ask most people, I say, okay, you're talking about saving, even in your 401k, whatever else it is, and then versus your lifestyle. So how much do you make now? How much do you have to save to live off that, right? And we're also not assuming here that your income's going to go up four times and all, you know, all this different stuff. So the problem is when you look at it, then the next factor comes in. How long are you going to live? So 65, right? Well, then if you're factoring that you're going to die by 80, that is very different than 100. And you may not be able to live. And if you save $1 million, how much money is that $1 million going to make you? Like, are you going to have cash flow that's available? It's, to me, that's scary. When going through those numbers, I'm like, this is impossible. How am I ever going to do this? Like, I can't save enough. And that was a big, big thing for me. I literally couldn't save enough.
Yeah, I have this analogy that I use in one of like the talks that I usually give, where it's like, you know, the traditional lifestyle that people kind of subscribe to, where it's basically saying like, all right, AJ, like I need you to give me $60 in three clean, crisp $20 bills, right? In exchange, I'm going to give you 15 crumpled up ones. What that stands for is the 60 years of working in responsibility to other people versus the 15, 20 years you might have free. We talk about an asymmetrical bet. Like that's actually a money bet right there, right? It's like you're giving up your 60 best years if you're retiring at 60 or 65 in exchange for your 15 worst. And I just never understood why people would take that.
I could not agree more.
Yeah. Okay, AJ, I want to transition a little bit here into like, okay, you've, by almost any means, you're a very successful businessman. You've generated multiple millions for you and your family. And so now tell us a little bit about like the home lifestyle that you have. Right? What have you been able to, you know, all three of us are here on the show, right? You know, we're blessed in that none of our wives have to work. They're there taking home care of our kids, taking care of our families, taking care of us, which is a wonderful dynamic in my opinion. Talk to us a little bit about that.
You know, when I got married, it was funny. I had a conversation with my wife before. I was like, just so you know, we're probably either going to be either really well off or dirt broke, and there's probably not going to be much in between. So I have big dreams, right? I have all this stuff I want to do. I thought I was going to build an insurance company, which, by the way, none of the things that I thought I was going to do, I did. That all changed dramatically. But it was, you know, but it was this idea that she was like, that's fine, but you do need to take care of me and the family, right? And I'm like, done. That was her thing, is she was like, I want to have kids and I need to be able to have that possibility. And I said, okay, I will make sure that always happens, right? And that is actually probably the thing that I'm most proud of in life, is that when I became paralyzed, I still took care of my family, even though I couldn't work. It's the thing that I hold dearest to me, is that I did that for them. And the amount of pride and accomplishment that comes with that, I can't even describe. That I could lie in a bed and they lived life. The kids went to private school. They had their nice house and they played and they were all okay, even though dad was messed up. As a man, that was so fulfilling to me. Like, I did my job. Like, I'm taking care of these people that I love, right? Now, our life today and, you know, how we live, first and foremost, I work a lot. But I do it because I love it. But I play a lot. So, you know, we took my wife, we went to the Philippines, I went to Dubai. We, you know, we take big vacations when we want. My kids don't have school on Friday. So Friday mornings, I'm not going into the office till 10 or 11. Why? Because I get up, we make food, and we all hang out and stuff. And I have control over my time. So even though I work a lot, like literally before I walked in, my wife was like, hey, can I bring somebody over? Because they're building schools and you're helping. I'm like, sure, when do you want to come over? They come over, we'll have meetings. You know, it's on our time. And the thing is, we're building together. So it's fun. We like it. It's our choice. And we get to do a lot of things that we're very fortunate that people just and live in a way that is not normal and people don't get. And that's a blessing and that's fun. And I'm beyond grateful for that. And it comes with also this huge sense of comfort because we are protected, which that is hard to, that knowledge of we're okay. It helps you sleep at night. It helps you have fun when you want to have fun. And it helps you take risks. And it allows you to do things mentally and have in a partnership and family life that would be very hard to do otherwise if I didn't know if I was going to be okay next month, if we could pay bills. It's the fact that I provide that for my family is, it brings me great, great joy and pride.
Yeah. And it's funny that you kind of, I feel like you almost just slipped this under the table, but you said your wife has people over and you're building schools. I almost have to like, did he actually say that? Well, what do you mean you're building schools?
So my wife didn't like, and I did not like the educational system. And so she built entrepreneurship business schools that are accelerated programs because she wanted to put our kids somewhere. And she decided that if we're not going to just complain about things, we're going to do about it, do something about it. So she built a school, and it's a private school. She's building more, and they're taking it, and it has a focus and an emphasis on entrepreneurship, investing, business, but it's applied knowledge is what they learn. So it doesn't mean you have to be a business owner or entrepreneur or anything else, but they have things like the classroom economy, meaning their desk, they have to rent it. And they can buy desks. They can even buy somebody else's desk and then rent it back to them. They have their own currency. They have their own jobs. And so it's a classroom economy. And it functions. They learn about taxes, paying bills. They learn about laws. They learn about how the government works because the school has the government in place. So if you want to start a business, you can have a business in school. You have to get a license from it. And there's certain roles that kids have. And it's like, it's application knowledge based in an accelerated program. They don't really do homework, and they don't have school on Fridays, and they are a grade above or more than the public school system.
Wow.
That's awesome. That's amazing. Where do you live? I want to send my 2-year olive there.
You go, Ida.
Send olive there.
Wow. Yep.
I always thought of like schools just like they don't teach you about just the average stuff of how to save money and credit cards. Like they don't teach you anything that kind of like real life, like real estate, you know, any of that stuff. My wife was a teacher as well, first, second, third grade, but yeah, she's staying home now. So grateful for that. But yeah, I absolutely love what your wife is doing. That's amazing.
Well, and that's the thing that, you know, it's like when you take care of certain needs, you can focus on others. So what we've chosen to do was when our needs were met, we didn't then just move to pleasure, meaning, okay, all we're going to do is travel and lie on the beach, things like that, which we do. We travel a lot. I'll circumnavigate the globe. We're all about that. I want to learn, have new experiences. But we decided to take care of bigger problems. And so we felt a responsibility and a draw towards saying, here's other things we can solve, and we have the ability to, so we want to. It's like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? As our needs were met, instead of stopping, we kept trying. And she wanted to create and solve bigger problems for more people. It's a nonprofit that she built and created. And it was a huge, obviously, tremendous success. And it's amazing. It's shocking. They have a campus and, you know, it's wild. And that is outrageously fulfilling, right? And those are the things that we can start to focus on and take care of, and how we're doing good and how we're giving back and follow our passions to make the world a better place. And we love that.
That's amazing. What grade does this school system start at? Like, when can you enroll in the school?
A through high, all the way.
Wow. It's a true, yep. It's okay. Is it only in Idaho, or which states are you in?
It's in Idaho. She's moving it to other states though, right now. We're looking in Arizona, I think Colorado, and there's another place, but she's trying to set up more like a licensee/franchise thing so they can take it and start moving fast and going all over the place.
That's amazing. Are you up in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, or are you just in Southern?
We need to be. So yeah. we need to be, man. It's that's been something that we've looked at a lot because we're obviously down here in Southern Idaho. So
yeah, I will say
we have more places that want us to go than we have even remotely the ability to get to right now. And so that's why we're working really hard to set it up in the back end so we can create and provide an option where it can be like a joint venture and people can come help us. And then we go set it up. And so we can expand further.
Yeah. You know, I can't speak to other places, but I know up here in Northern Idaho, the homeschooling community is massive. And so you've got a lot, because no one really likes the public school system here. And so, you know, I have to imagine that probably focusing on places where you've just got parents who aren't professional teachers trying to teach kids these things, you know, it probably makes sense. Like, I'm praying that you come up this way, but I'm working our kids. Yeah.
It is. We view it as the alternative option. So I've kind of coined this thing called micro schools. And that's, I believe we need to go back to schools before the prison and government got involved. So people that build prisons build schools. I don't know if you knew that. They're the same contractors. So they build prisons for children, and they do it at mass. And so you stick thousands of kids in together and 35, 40 kids in a room. Kids are not designed to learn that way. It is not how we're made. They don't thrive. And most of them, there's no way that a teacher can attend to the needs of 35 people in 1 hour. It can't happen. And it's ridiculous that we think that a teacher should be able to do that. That is so wild to me that we would assume that, yeah, you're a teacher. You should be able to make every one of those 35 kids in that 1 hour excel. And we need to get back to more intimate. You have 11, 10 kids to one teacher and applicable-based life skills. Their needs are being attended to, and the families are actually merged into the school, meaning it's open. They want input. They need to be a part of it. So we believe that you should bring parents in, not push them out, that they're actually a part of the schooling system and role. So I call them micro schools, where I'm like, it's not necessarily the school small. They have hundreds of kids at school, but the classrooms are, and it feels small. Meaning it feels, everybody knows each other. They all know the kids in the grade. The teachers are walking by, they're not in their class. They know all the kids in the two classrooms up because there's only 10 of them, right? And so and then the kids know that. They feel that. They understand that. They have multiple people to go get help to, right? It's not that you have a teacher that will never actually know all 35 kids ever in her classroom. So that's kind of the concept and what we're trying to do and change.
I love that. And I'm just curious, like, how has your other business ventures been able to fund this more passionate, like, world changing?
A lot. We basically floated the school. And then I also used the resources out of the business to apply to that. Everything from attorneys, architectures, right? All that. So you're able to take and pool resources together to get it done that we could have never done, obviously, on our own and didn't have the time for. So the great thing about when I look at my position and my abilities is I have the ability to leverage. I can leverage knowledge, time, resources, capital, right? All this, but capital is actually the least. That's the least important. Your ability to leverage time and knowledge and resources and opportunities, right? That's huge because that's what you need to accomplish anything. So putting people together in a room and saying, I need all of your knowledge. I need all of your time. Now you have me, and then you get my time, except you get all these other people's time and all of their knowledge. That's how you put it together. Most people try to do things on their own, which is crazy. It's like, there's this romantic idea of like the entrepreneur who is the individual, who's the bootstrap, did it all on their own, right? That is an absolute curse to any entrepreneur. Because first of all, that's not how it happened. Like this magical story, romantic story that they put people, right? The reason Apple is a thing is not necessarily because of Steve Jobs. It's because of the private equity company. It is. It's because of a private equity company that came in and they built out. They were literally in a garage. That sounds romantic until you realize that the professionals walked up to the garage and said, I'm going to turn this into an actual company. And I'm not taking anything away from them. That doesn't take it. That means they were smart. Because they chose that person to leverage their time resources so they could make themselves into something else. But I see in right now, it's like, it's almost like a pride thing where they're like ashamed. I didn't get help from anybody. And I'm like, well, you're an idiot. Like if I had an entrepreneur that was like, I got here all by myself. I didn't get help from anybody. I'd be like, dude, I'm not giving you anything. I'm not giving you money, not giving you time. That is the scariest thing to me in the world. Because it means you're so prideful. That first of all, you think you did it on your own, but second, you're not going to go get things and opportunities and resources when you need it. That is an atomic bomb to progress. And so the best thing in my position and other things is you can leverage that knowledge, other people, and you can bring people together to accomplish someone. Because I can't do it. I'm not smart enough. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough abilities to. But I know if I get a lot of people together, we can.
I love that. You know, I think a lot of people are afraid to give away what they've built, right? Like you can bootstrap your company to a certain point, but typically to get to the next level, you're going to have to give away some equity. You're going to have to give away something, right? And then you look at some of like the most successful business people in the world, right? Like let's just say Jeff Bezos, right? Do you know how much of Amazon he owns?
Less than 10% probably now.
Yeah, like right around 10%.
Yeah, but he just sold $45 billion. That last week. I think he's below 10
now. Okay. Maybe he might even be below 10 now, right? And so, but that's the point, right? Is Jeff Bezos started Amazon. He's given away over 90% of his company and he's still one of the wealthiest men in the world, right? And so oftentimes, like, you need to get people on board and make those asymmetrical bets. He's betting part of his company so that the bigger pie will grow.
I believe that you're either growing or you're dying. There's no in between. The only difference is you don't know it. So the reason being is because that's how economics work. So things are changing, whether you are or not, they are around you. And at some point, that gap gets to be too big and you are no longer able to survive and perform. And so, you know, people that are like, that have a business and they're like, you know, I'm okay where I'm at. I'm like, that's great. That's awesome. You will not be here in 10, 15 years. I consulted with businesses. That's what I did. We had hundreds of them all over the countries, everyone from Super Value, the, you know, Fortune 500 companies down below. And I always knew the ones that would never be around 20 years. And it was because of that mentality.
I love that. Awesome, AJ. Well, we're going to head into, you know, the final part of the show here. Before we do, we just want to kind of understand where are you headed next? What's your next 5 or 7 years look like? Or at least in your opinion, what they might look like.
Our next 5 or 7 years are going to be really, really big. We just went through a big growth phase and private equity, things like that. I learned a lot, failed a lot. And that was a hard period because I grew without investor capital prior. And then we introduced investor capital so we could really grow, which was amazing. And we got lots of opportunities, things like that. But it was new for me. I didn't know anything about it. And so that's been great. But we've readjusted over the last little bit and we had to learn so we can get to our next stage. Like I view it like in those growth phases, there's always a plateau phase, right? And the plateau is adjusting and preparing for the next one. I think I've been in that for the last year as the markets have overall changed and we've been able to set back, go and look at things. So our next phase that we're looking at is a very much consolidation phase. So we are looking at consolidating not just assets, but businesses, which we've already started, and spreading out to that. So we have a vertically integrated system, but it's not like normal vertical integration. I call it a universally integrated system. I have outward-facing companies, inward-facing companies that I own and control, and we pull all the data. That I'm trying to round out. So I need to purchase a few big companies, and then our goal is to be the largest non-REIT in the world that has full access to all of the data and everything within the organization. That lowers our risk. It improves our odds and output. It helps us get all sorts of stuff, more money, diversifies revenue sources and a whole bunch of stuff. So that's what we're building. And that's what we believe will get us to over the $1 billion mark in the next 5 years.
Amazing. And are you talking collectively all of your companies, like the, you know, the self-storage, private equity, the school?
Yeah. So actually that was mainly over the $1 billion mark was just on the self-storage stuff. I believe that our tech company will, in 5 years for sure, be, it's already a few hundred million. I think it'll surpass 5-7 years, the $1 billion mark. Two or three of my companies should surpass that mark. And I'm not saying that is like we're going to be $1 billion. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm like, we're already 500 million. Like we can plan it out, right?
Yeah.
And so it's just looking at that and saying, what do we need to go to the next phase? And look at it. So I think we should have two at least that in 5 to 7 years will cross that barrier. But I think there's a lot of sleeper ones that we have that will not hit those levels, but will be really, really big. And more importantly, it's what they'll do within the organization. So it's not even so much how much money they make, things like that, but it's access and spread and what that will do. I'm trying to create a private equity company that's not like that does, you know, real estate business, things like that, but it's center focused, but all parts are working within each other. So it's kind of a little different in how I see the puzzle coming together, but they're all specific pieces. Like I'm not just out buying businesses for buying businesses. I need a data source. I need this because that ties into that. And so once again, leverage, I'm trying to use leverage in businesses like you would use leverage in people to accomplish a goal. Same thing.
Right. Totally got you. So you're building a conglomerate. Yeah, I understand. To all help your focus business. And then eventually you think you'll package it all up and sell it? Or what's like the end goal?
No. Well, I think I'll use it to leverage into other verticals. And so from there, we will move out and move into other verticals.
Gotcha. Awesome.
I'm designing the ownership and structure and control in a way that would allow it so I don't need to sell.
Amazing. AJ, this has been great, man. You know, I think we do need to move into the final part of our show. We don't want to take up too much more of your time. And so, Chad, you know what time it is?
I do.
It's time for the
final four.
All right, man, kick us off.
AJ, what book are you reading right now?
Dorsky's The Idiot. So he's a philosopher from Russia that went in the Soviet era, and he wrote a book called The Idiot, and it's a really good book about people and why they do what they do. And it's amazing to see his reflections and time during that. But it's a philosophical book on like a lot of the stuff we're talking about today, like what is worth it and why people are doing and what holds us back. Yeah, it's fascinating. Really good book.
Awesome.
Love it. AJ, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
That's first of all, I don't think there's a best. I think that lots of them together make the best. But I'll pull this one out here. So I had a mentor and a very close friend that's Marriott's, and he told me once, he said, in business and in life, you're going to be asked to do competing things that still has to be done. And he said, I'm going to ask you to do things that are, they seem contrary, but it doesn't mean that they are, they are contrary, but you still have to do them. And it's the hardest part of leadership. So let me give you an example. Like you need to improve employee sentiment and you need to improve culture, but you also have to lay off 25% of the employees, right? You need to expand our marketing efforts, but you have to cut the budget. You need to buy this many properties, but you don't have any money. You need to do this and this. So there are two things that are contrary to each other, but they exist in the same realm. And your success in life and in business will be predicated on whether you can do that, whether you can execute on two counters in the same area. And I strongly believe that. I believe that most people can't because they use it as an excuse. I need to do this, but I can't because of that. And then they don't. And leaders don't do that. They say, okay, I've got to go fight this army, but I've now have to get rid of all of this artillery because we can't get over the mountain. And so they get rid of the artillery and then they change the plan so they can still win. I don't think you can be a good leader unless you can hold those two things together and make it work.
Totally. I mean, it's having your cake and eating it too, right? Like
100%.
Yeah. Dang it. If it's my cake, it's because, I want to eat it.
Yeah. And two, I look at it because life doesn't give you everything you want. It doesn't matter. Nobody cares. Nobody cares about you. Like this, mm-hmm. That's such a weird thing that people think that I deserve something or that life doesn't care whether you meet a certain one or you're the one that does. And so you got to take what you get and make something out of it. And if you can't do it, nobody's going to give it all to you. So you're not just not going to do anything. So
totally, totally. Awesome, man.
Yeah, I love that. We touched on this a little bit, but maybe expand upon what is your why?
So there's the social media answer and then there's the honest answer. My why is, of course, you know, family and other people, things like that. The honest answer, though, is probably it's just something inside me. I like it. I like playing the game. I like going. I don't know how to stop. And that's probably more of a truth. It's meaning that I would probably be doing what I'm doing no matter what. And I think it's because I've learned to love what I do. And I love the game. And I think that's something you learn. I don't think it doesn't mean like you're like, oh, I wasn't born with that. I don't think I was, but I think I built that up inside me where I love the process so much that the process is why I do it. And so my why is because it's what I like to do.
I love that. I love how it's just genuine straight up. Yeah. Like it, you don't need a reason.
Yeah.
Your reason is because you love it.
Love
and
it.
That's it. It's a game. It's a sport, right?
100%. I'm not going to stop.
Yeah. And it's great because even when I was like asking you too, like, are you going to sell? And you're like, no, I'm not going to sell because I love it. Right? I mean, that was like what I got like underneath of what you said, like we're reading between the lines. Awesome, man. Okay. So last question. What is the weirdest food combination that you love?
Weirdest food combination I love. I don't know how weird it is. I love ranch and pizza, but I actually like weird combinations. I'm a total guy that I'm like, yeah, let's do sushi and pizza. Like, I'm all about that. Like, I don't. Yeah. So it's like, I like it. I like it. It doesn't really matter too much for me if it goes together. I can eat Skittles and have teriyaki chicken. And I'm like, yeah. So
let's go. You ever put sushi on your pizza?
Put what?
You ever put sushi on your pizza?
I haven't, but I'll do it. Gonna try
there
that,
you go. So. Next time. Yeah. Gotta go get pizza with AJ.
That's right.
Awesome, man. Cool. AJ, again, man, thanks so much for coming on. It's just so inspiring to hear about your story, hearing what you're doing, not only in your, you know, in your business, but also, you know, what your wife is doing with the nonprofits and the schools. And I think, you know, you might get a few new enrollments here just after this episode comes out. So
I hope so.
Tell me, where can people find out more about you, your business, your website, your wife's schooling thing?
Yeah, it's luckily really easy to find. AJ Osborne, Google it. But if you go Instagram, AJ Osborne Self-Storage, you want to learn about that, it's super easy to find me. I am not hidden. So I have two podcasts and a best-selling book, all of which you can find to go AJ Osborne Self-Storage, and it'll pop up. And Instagram, it's just AJ Osborne.
Boom. Did you have to like pay somebody to get AJ Osborne on Instagram? I feel like your name
I got early. I was so lucky.
You got it early?
I got it early. I was lucky. Yeah. I did have to pay my domain name, ajosborne.com. And that was... cost me over 10 grand to get it.
Jeez. Yeah. The perks of having, I never realized this, but the perks of having a unique name, it definitely comes up.
Oh,
definitely benefits.
Well, every time my child was born, I bought their domain name. And the ones that we were going to have, I went and just bought all their domain names so I could have them. I was like, I want to get them locked down for them. So I got them forever.
did you check the domain name before you named your kid?
Yeah, I did on a couple of them. Yeah. One of them, we didn't use the name, so I got rid of it. But
that's so funny, man. Awesome, bro. Well, hey, thanks again, man. So much for coming on. Again, your story is super inspirational. I think people get a lot from it. And hopefully... you know, some people will be reaching out, but otherwise, man, we'll be in touch and talk soon.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. This was great, guys.
Thanks, AJ.
All right, later. And that was AJ Osborne. Chad, what'd you think about AJ?
Dude, he's like insane. You always hear of that, you know, you want to surround yourself with, well, I guess that's what they're saying, but you don't want to be the smartest person in the room. That's what I was looking for. Definitely felt that of like, this guy is the mindset, the fact that he was starting businesses in multiple, but not just one, but multiple businesses while being in a wheelchair and on life support. And I mean, just putting myself in that position of you're in the hospital, like you don't know if you're going to live. 99.999% of people are going to like feel bad for themselves and like, I just need to live and get to the next day, where he's like, no, I need to kick this in high gear and start more businesses. Yeah, he's a very inspirational guy.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have empathy for people like that, right? Like, and then the people that are getting the empathy, it almost is like a spiraling downward effect, right? Where it's like, oh, I feel so sorry. Oh my gosh, yada, yada, yada. And then you're just like, you know, you just perpetuate into like this almost depressive state. And AJ just like was not having any of that. He didn't ask for any empathy. He didn't ask for anything. Right. Like, he's just like, you know what? Like, I could feel sorry for myself, or I could make this one heck of a story. Right. And so, and I think a lot of people too, when you're in your position, and you don't need to put yourself in the hospital to be in AJ's position. Right. Like, think about the position you're in now. Pretend like that's the hospital bed. Pretend like that's, you know, that's your do or die situation. And be like, yeah, you can, oh, you had to work late one day, or oh, your toilet, a toilet broke at 2 a.m, or oh, a water heater went out. Sure, you can get empathy, and that's what you'll get, and you'll get someone to feel bad for you, and they won't even feel bad for you. They'll just say it anyway. They won't actually probably feel it, and if they do feel it, who cares? Or you can just flip the whole script upside down and be like, okay, this is just an obstacle. This is something that's in the way. This is going to make me better. This is why not everybody does it, because if everybody did it, it wouldn't be as good. You wouldn't make as much. You wouldn't enjoy it as much. The things you enjoy the most are the things that the least other people have, right? And so, yeah, I think that's like that's kind of a big thing. And I loved how AJ was able to kind of describe and show us those points.
Yeah. And what his wife is doing too, or doing is, that's awesome. I might have to move to a town where they open up a school app, because I have thought of that before. And yeah, I love what they're doing with the school system.
Yeah. We'll see you in Idaho. But yeah, I mean, doing a school like, an entrepreneurial school, like that is what the country has been asking for years and years and years. And of course the government's not going to give it to them, because that would totally jeopardize their tax plan. But here we are. So, I really hope that school does take off. And, you know, by the time our kids are school age, hopefully they're, we don't have kids yet, but when we do have kids and they become school age, hopefully there's one near us that we can make happen. So.
Yeah, exactly. Love it.
Cool, man. Well, Chad, it's been good talking to you. guys, it's been everyone else. It's been great hanging out with you for the week. If you guys wouldn't mind, please, please, please leaving us a rating and review, and then shoot us a message on Instagram if you ever have any questions or anything like that. I'm the Fi Guy. Chad is.
I am Rocky the Realtor on Instagram.
Rocky the Realtor. We'll see you all next week.
See ya.
That's it for this episode of Investify. We hope that these nuggets of real estate wisdom lead to more savvy financial planning and a clearer path towards financial freedom. For more content like this, subscribe to the show at investify.com. Don't forget to leave a rating and share it with your friends. Together, we can transform more real estate newbies into successful and clever investors. Thank you so much for listening. See you on the next one.